Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit olathekia.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, along with the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. What's up, Carter? How are you, man?
What's up, Nate? Doing well. I mean, how about that for August for Sporting Kansas City? Going to be tough to move on to in a new month, I think.
You can break down in many ways, and they've done it at SportingKC.com. The idea that this might have been the most dominant month of soccer in franchise history, as they Sporting Kansas City outscored their opponents, 8-0 over the course of this stretch. They, of course, kept four clean sheets. Now they've had four clean sheets in a month before. They've had four clean sheets in a row before, but they've never had only four games in a month, and all four of those games being clean sheets. So that's the easiest way to try to describe a kind of complicated stat, but the bottom line is August was really good, wasn't it?
Yep. That's a interesting, fun little stat that sometimes we come up with, but I think the most important thing is the 8 goals scored, 0 allowed in four games. And, They're looking pretty good, trying to move up the table here, just 1 point back now.
All right, we're going to talk a lot about this great run of form for Sporting KC. We're also going to preview a matchup against a team that's maybe even in a better run of form, and a record that team is looking to break that is owned right now by Sporting Kansas City. So SKC have an opportunity going to Seattle, of course that's who I'm talking about, on Saturday, to make sure that it stays tied at a 7-game winning streak, is the longest since the rules format change in 2000 in MLS history. Sporting did it in the first 7 games of 2012, and Minnesota United have won 7 in a row now coming into this game. So Sporting have a little something extra to play for in this one. We're going to break that game down for you. We will talk with a legend for the Seattle Sounders, who's now with Sporting KC, Brad Evans, to get a preview of that game. And we will also talk about the loss of a Sporting legend, really a Kansas City legend, the original head coach of the Kansas City Wiz, Ron Newman, who died at the age of 84 in Tampa, Florida, earlier this week. He was the first head coach in MLS history, and he brought a lot of the legends of those original Wizards teams to Kansas City. Preki, Chris Klein, Mo Johnston, Tony Miola, to name a few. We're going to talk with Tony Miola about Ron Newman and some of his memories of the first ever coach in franchise history. So a sad day there, 84, that's a full life, but certainly we need to honor the legacy of the first head coach in franchise history.
Yeah, it's going to be great to talk to Tony about that. He'll obviously have much better insight into the teachings and ways of Ron Newman, but what a crucial moment in soccer history in America, and he was a big part of it, helping to launch MLS and first coach in the history of the league. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we see where the league is now compared to where it was, and he coached all over American soccer. Those of us that remember the MISL days, there's been some pretty funny videos of his work with the San Diego Sockers back in those days, and coached in NASL as well, won a lot of trophies. He was an England native, but became an American and really had a lot to do with the growth of American soccer. And I think that in his dying days, he had to have smiled at where the sport is in the United States today compared to where it was way back in the 70s and 80s, let alone in 1995 when he took over here in Kansas City. So rest in peace, Ron Newman. We'll talk with Tony Miola about that. Well, let's focus on Sporting Kansas City for a little bit here. And this latest game in this 4-game winning streak, Sporting Kansas City 2, Minnesota United 0. A substitution by Peter Vermees pays off almost immediately when a goal is scored by Johan Quaze, and then they double the advantage a little bit later in the game on Diego Rubio continuing his good goal-scoring form. 2 assists from Johnny Russell on the day. Carter, you were on the sideline for it. What did you make of the performance by Sporting KC?
I think, for me, what is most impressive is when they aren't exactly at their best and they're still able to get a clean sheet and a victory. And The stat that sticks out to me is 8 saves by Tim Melia. And I think when you look at that Minnesota United team, they'll be disappointed that they started giving away so many chances towards the end of the game. And Tim Melia this season, he's only had 8 saves or more 2 other times. It was in Atlanta and in L.A. against the Galaxy, I believe. So I think that shows that, hey, maybe we and you could hear it from Peter Vermes and Sasanovic at the end of the game, they were unhappy with how they ended the game and allowing Minnesota to get all these opportunities. But even despite going into the halftime break 0-0, I just feel like this is an impressive victory from that standpoint, that they weren't at their best like they were against Portland. So that performance against Portland was so good, but they were still able to get all 3 points.
Yeah, they had about a 15-minute to 20-minute stretch, I think, where they were really good.
Yeah.
That's when they scored the 2 goals, and that was enough to win the game.
It looked like it was going to be like 4-5-0 at that point, mm-hmm. but you're right. It was enough to win the game, that nice little stretch.
Things got a little sloppy at that point. Like you said, there was a lot of players with body language of just kind of putting their hands up like, what was that? What are you doing? And we haven't seen that very much from this team, even in games they've lost. When you've got the regulars on the field, they've been pretty in sync for quite some time. But again, I think that we all take away from that. You play less than your A game and you still get a 2-0 victory. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. But I'll tell you what, man, when you look at the conference standings right now, and even maybe the Supporter Shield standings is something we should look at, even if it's not out of the lens of winning Supporter Shield, the lens of who gets home field advantage if you are to make it all the way to MLS Cup, which I certainly think that Sporting Kansas City has every right to believe they're in the mix for that. Mm-hmm. And they're creeping up a little bit on NYCFC and New York Red Bulls in those regards. They're 1 point behind FC Dallas in the West. They are 2 points ahead of LAFC, and Sporting do have a game in hand over LAFC. And right after that, Real Salt Lake 2 points behind LAFC. Seattle Sounders 3 points behind Real Salt Lake. So it's a jumble, as it always is. In the West, there's a lot to be played for with 9 games to go. And if you take a look at all those teams that are in the mix with Sporting Kansas City down the stretch, I mean, they've got head-to-heads. They play at FC Dallas, second to last game of the season. Last game of the season, they play at home against Los Angeles. They've got home games against RSL, Seattle, and LA, who are 3, 4, 5, and 6 in the standings. So, I mean, you talk about a big run-up to the playoffs. That is certainly in front of Sporting Kansas City right now.
Yep, and this is always such a fun part of the MLS year, right? And you're not surprised to see that the schedule, they usually do have more conference games there towards the back end, and just having that FC Dallas and LAFC games back-to-back to end the season, those could be absolutely massive. So I think you're right. I think they've got everything out in front of them that they set out to do at the beginning of the year still. They could still get in there in the Supporter Shield. They're back a ways, obviously, but still very much alive, and even more so for that top 2 seed in the West. And they've done it they've gotten a little healthier in August, but yeah, you know, how good have they been defensively, and you know, getting back to the basics in that regard. And I also like getting Johnny Russell back in the starting lineup. And I mean, what a player he is, and it's just looking up and up for this Sporting team. They're just really in good form right now.
Well, you mentioned having Johnny Russell back. They'll have him back for a little bit, but then he's going to be gone.
Yeah.
As we've got the news that Daniel Shalloway and Johnny Russell both have been called into their national teams, so they're going to miss the game in a couple of weeks against Orlando City here at Children's Mercy Park on September 8th. But that's another one of the positive things, isn't it, about this stretch? It's not just that Johnny Russell and Daniel Shalloway have played so great. We've actually had a glimpse of some guys that have proven they can step in and do the job every bit as well, it seems, if those guys can't be there.
Yeah, the squad depth is really starting to show. Gerso Fernandez had a pretty good August, you would say. Mm-hmm. He was kind of back into his normal run of taking guys on and using that pace as a real outlet on the wings. And then you have a guy like Johan Kwaze who starts the game on the bench and comes in and makes an immediate impact. We heard exactly what Peter Vermes wanted from him, wanted him to be more direct and make those runs, and within 90 seconds he was making a run into the box and scoring. So, it looks like a really deep team after just a little bit of a lull there in July where they had some guys missing. So you hope that that experience will allow them to cover for the losses of Russell and Shalloway there for a little bit, but What a moment for Daniel Shallowy. I big congratulations to him. I know he's been waiting for this for a long time, so really happy for him. That's just wonderful news that he'll go and hopefully make his senior team debut.
Yeah, I just read an article that was listing the best bargains in MLS in 2018 for salary, and a lot of times it is those guys that are homegrown players, and Daniel Shallowy fits in that category. Certainly has been so, and it's not going unnoticed, obviously, by his national team. So yeah, congratulations to both of them for getting called in, and I will say this: congratulations to you, because this is one of those moments of TV magic. We can't script these things out when we're getting ready for our broadcast and when things happen in the middle of the game. And I know at halftime, I was thinking, just like everybody else, well, I hope Carter finds out from Peter if there are some major tactical changes that are going to be made, because the game was really frustrating in the first half, and it was obvious that Minnesota United were frustrating what Sporting Kansas City were trying to do. Well, he makes a substitution. You ask him about it. He tells us what Quaze is going to do, and then darn if he doesn't go out and do it 90 seconds later. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and just the look on the coaching staff's face was actually really funny at that point, because it was kind of like, yeah, just like we said, that's what's going to happen, and it did. So, yeah, that was good to hear it come straight from his mouth and then straight into fruition there. Just a couple of minutes later, that was really cool.
If you want to read that piece about the best bargains, Paul Tenorio put that one out on Twitter, and I retweeted that out as well. Also, I'll give some love to Paul Kennedy, who tweeted out some good stuff about Ron Newman as we talk about him. He said, quote, Ron Newman's place in American soccer, no other coach won titles in the NASL, ASL, and MISL. No coach did more to promote American soccer in the late 1960s. In 1970s, he always kept a sense of perspective and was ready with a good laugh, RIP. So well said, Paul Kennedy, as well. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Brad Evans and break down this upcoming game against the Seattle Sounders, which will be, of course, another big one in the Western Conference, as we continue with the Sporting Kansas City Show. Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. And we're getting ready for maybe the two hottest teams in all of MLS, certainly in the Western Conference at least, the Sporting Kansas City, four wins in a row, hoping to break up a seven-game winning streak by the Seattle Sounders, as Sporting head up to Seattle on Saturday. So what better guy to talk about it with than a guy who's currently with us in Kansas City, but obviously is a Seattle Sounders legend, Brad Evans. What's up, Brad? How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good. But before we get into this this matchup on Saturday, a more pressing issue right now for a lot of people is fantasy football, because on my morning show this morning, Matt Beisler told me that there's a fantasy football league among some of the players. And I asked him, now that Benny Failhaber's gone, who is a guy who would never stop talking about his fantasy football team, who's the most dedicated fantasy football player on the team now? And you were the first guy he mentioned. Is this true? Are you a dedicated fantasy football player?
I am dedicated, but not obsessed. Benny has a very obsessive personality with every single thing you could imagine. So I'm very grateful that I don't have that Failhaber gene in me at all. But yes, once the season kind of rolls around, I do get pretty into it. So I'm in multiple leagues, and obviously our free time, I don't have any kids or anything, so I literally just sit here all day. And when I get home from training, and I've got nothing but time to delve into the inner workings of the fantasy world. So I really enjoy it, and we had a fun little draft order the way that we did it. I don't know if he spoke with you about it, but it was pretty interesting, something I had never done before. So it was cool.
Now you've got my interest piqued here, because he did not tell us about this. How did you guys settle the draft order?
So we chose, there were four things that you could choose from, and we actually had Ike choose one of the four. They were crumpled up papers. One said old to young, young to old, and then old young, and then young old. So four possibilities of how the draft order would go. So he drew, it was young to old. So then the golf tournament that was this past weekend, we started off, I think Lucio's playing with us, he's the youngest guy. And so he got to pull out of a hat one of the top 12 golfers that were participating in the tournament. from there, wherever your golfer finished, then you got to choose where you wanted to be in the draft. It's kind of a roundabout way to get there, but something, you know, there's like three different out of a hat, random, got to watch golf to figure out just where you would be able to pick a number. So I think I had Tiger, so I ended up with like the, I think, eighth option of where I wanted to pick, and I ended up choosing the 11th pick because I think only 7 through 11 were available. So I chose 11. We'll see. I was in that position last year, made the playoffs, made a decent run, but obviously didn't win the championship. As long as I don't lose, I'm really happy.
So I've never actually been in a league where you got to choose your draft order, and I'm going to be doing that on Sunday for the first time, but I get the last pick, so it doesn't really matter because I'm new to this league. If I had the first pick, like, what's the best pick to have?
I think Todd Gurley.
No, I mean, like, what pick in the order is, like,
yeah, it's a good question. I think I read something statistically, like, the most winners are actually, like, 7 and 8 or 8 and 9 or something like that, which is hard to believe, but I guess you get the middle of the, you get the most consistent team. You're really not under any pressure. You usually get outside of the top 3 and 4 picks, which makes your picks always easier, especially when it snakes back around to you every single round. But, you know, who knows? I've never had the number one pick. I've never had the last pick. So, I don't know if there's really a good answer.
So, Brad, are you a Cardinals guy, or do you have a favorite NFL team, or is it now? I know a lot of people just root for their fantasy teams over their actual teams now.
Yeah, so obviously being from Phoenix, definitely a Cardinals fan, and then being in Seattle for so long, became attached to the Seahawks, and especially, you know, knowing a bunch of the guys, and now, you know, one of my really good friends is Hauschka, and that he's moved on to Buffalo. Just out of that, I support them as well. And I haven't been to a Chiefs game yet, so I'm excited. And I know that being here will be, you know, it's instantly kind of, it's within 20 minutes. It's like, why not? Not through and through yet, but overall, I'd say I'm a Cardinals fan.
Well, we got to get you to a Chiefs game. You will enjoy the tailgating, unlike, I think, any place you've probably been. That's the one thing that Arrowhead's got that kind of sets it apart, and it's just basically a huge outdoor party. So we got to get you one of those for sure. And I'm glad you said Todd Gurley, because I did have the first pick in my draft over the past weekend, and I couldn't decide between Bell and Gurley, and I decided to go with Todd Gurley because he burned me. I had him in his gap year where he was terrible 2 years ago, and he was awesome on each side of it. So I'm a little nervous that it's going to be like an every other year thing for him. So I'm a little nervous about the pick right now.
I think you'll be good. A few years ago, that team was garbage, but they were pretty good last year. So I think you're in safe. But I'm really looking forward to the tailgating, because in Seattle, the stadium's downtown, and all there is a parking structure. So there was no tailgating at all.
Yeah,
like literally none. You had to go to like a restaurant to hang out. So I'm excited to get that like in an actual parking lot where everybody is just grilling out, having a good time, tossing the football around. That will be really cool.
Well, you haven't been to a Chiefs game yet, but you have been in Kansas City now for a good 7-ish months. Are you taking to the city? I know we talked to you a few months ago and you were liking it in the early stages, but have you found some good little coffee haunts?
Oh, yeah. Fully versed in the workings of the city now in terms of, you know, geographically, you know, where things are, the best restaurants. So overall, yeah, it's been great. Obviously, I'd like to see the pitch a bit more. And since the last time we talked, got a few games with Swift under my belt, and then kind of had a little bit of a nagging calf injury, but was in full training this week and hopefully, you know, progress. And, you know, ultimately being part of the team is what you want to do. Of course, you want to be playing on a weekly basis. If you can't do that, if you're not able to do that, then being the best teammate that you can has always been, part of my inner makings. When things are going tough, this team from top to bottom has rallied around me, which has been a good peace of mind in moving forward. And I think we're in a good position to make a run at this thing. And if you ask anybody else on the team, I think they'd say the same. And making the playoffs, you never know what can happen. You know, it's still, you know, 2.5-3 months of, intense soccer every week. We'll be getting after it. So stranger things have happened. So I just got to keep plugging away, put my head down, and you know, help the guys around me the best I can.
We're visiting with Brad Evans. You mentioned being a good teammate when you're not able to be on the field. We did an interview with Graham Smith earlier this year, and you know, he had made his MLS debut, and it was a thrilling comeback victory, an emotional day for him. We got to know about his story a little bit with his father having passed away not too long ago. But one of the things he told us when we interviewed him was that in advance of that first start for him, you took him to dinner. And he referenced that as a big moment for him, just having a veteran, you know, take him out and kind of talk to him and help him out a little bit. So I've always wanted to ask you about that. Take me back to this dinner, and was that you know, just a veteran calling up a younger guy and saying, "Hey, I want to take you under my wing"? Was it because you knew he was going to start? What led to this dinner, and what kind of went into the dinner?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these are the inner workings of a team. For me, it's a no-brainer. I don't think that a lot of people realize how stressful the games can be, especially when you're a young player. You know, if you know, you played at University of Denver, and it's, you know, they probably had decent crowds, maybe, you know, 400 or 500 people. And then he's expected, you know, with 2 days' notice to make a start in, you know, arguably the craziest crowd in MLS. Luckily, it was a home game, but still, I just wanted to make sure that you know, his head was on right, and you know, to treat it as, you know, try to treat it as a normal, as normal of a game as possible. And yeah, so I just called him up and said, let's go out to dinner. You know, took him to Italian restaurant, and you know, we just had a good dinner, and you know, some good chats, just to kind of take, you know, when you're a young guy and you're in that position, you're probably going to sit at home. You know, you're going to stir about, what should I eat? What shouldn't I eat? What should I watch on TV? What time should I go to bed? I think it makes a big difference if you can get a guy out, say, you know, you're kind of, this is what we're going to do tonight, and take their mind off of, you know, what can be a stressful evening leading up to the game. Because often, in my experience at least, is that's, you get your butterflies the night before the game. For me, it was always like after training leading up to dinner. And then kind of after dinner, you kind of settle into your nightly routine. And then the next day, as you kind of get to the stadium and right before the game, is kind of when you get those butterflies back. So, yeah, just that timing of, you know, getting out and take your mind off of it, chat about something other than soccer, I think is good. You know, I don't think we really talked too much other than at the end, just making sure that, you know, I told him to keep things simple and to most importantly, enjoy the time out there. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's not really a big deal. It's, I would hope that, you know, somebody would do the same for me if I was ever in that position in a job in the future, I guess.
Did somebody do that for you at the beginning stages of your career?
No. I had a different experience. I remember getting yelled at a lot my rookie year and, you know, kind of having to find my own way a little bit, which wasn't a bad thing. It just was different. That didn't really come until a couple months after I was really with that team of kind of getting into the mix. So that was maybe something that, you know, I wanted to make sure it didn't happen on teams that, you know, I was meant to be a leader on, is making sure that guys are integrated as quick as possible. Because ultimately this is a team top to bottom. And most teams preach that in preseason, but realistically it's probably numbers 11 through, you know, probably like 15 or 18 that most coaches really care about. But there are times where, you know, Graham ultimately had to step up, and that week he was probably actually like number 20, 22 on the roster. But he all of a sudden becomes number, you know, 10 or 11. And that's a difficult thing. So making sure that players take on that responsibility, that if the coaches are going to do it, but the guys that are really running the team recognize that.
Well, Brad, I want to go back to something you just said about thinking that you guys can really make a run at it this year. And obviously, having been there yourself before, I'm just curious how the culture in this locker room and, you know, around the team, how that compares to some of the successful teams you've been on in the past.
Yeah, I mean, the culture is second to none. I'm not sure that I've ever – I think the only team I could compare it to culture-wise, group-wise, is the 2008 Columbus team that I was on, where everybody from day one was kind of bought in. No real superstars, nobody to take the attention away in the locker room from, you know, being a big personality that kind of sometimes can send young guys into a shell, or can take away from some things. And that's not to say that those teams don't win and can't win. It's just different, in my opinion, that this is how a locker room should be. And it's been really fun to be a part of. So I definitely see similarities to that 2008 team. But the other side of similarities is getting hot at the right time. And I think that we've done it at just about the right time if we're going to, really push and get guys healthy and get everybody on the roster bought in and good training sessions. Now the grass pitches are just about perfect. So just kind of getting into the groove at the right time. And now it's up to the leaders on the group. The big guys, can they now take over games at the end of the year where, legs are going to get tired? There's a lot of guys that played a lot of minutes. And now can we all kind of rally around that and use that to our advantage instead of as a detriment? And I think that that's really important leading into the last 2 months of the regular season.
All right, Brad, let's talk about this Seattle game. First of all, we had you on right before they came to town. That's one thing, but it's another thing to go back to Seattle, which is what you guys will be doing. I don't know if you'll be on the trip or not, but in terms of going to Seattle, if you go, what's that emotion like? What's that experience like in your mind's eye before you even do it?
Yeah, well, I think number one, as a player that has played there, the mindset is, I know what they'll be saying in the locker room is that they're going to want to put us under pressure from the get-go. And in my mind, the last thing that I wanted as a player there was for a team to come in and dictate the tempo and really, no matter what, put us under pressure. And by us, I meant the Sounders under pressure from the get-go. I think that's going to be important. And something I think we talked about early in the season, in April and May, I know the coaching staff kind of harped on it, said we're going to play the same way we play at home, that we do away. And I think that this is a really important game to do that. They're obviously on this ridiculous run. If they win one more game, they break an MLS record of most wins in a row, which if you would have told that team, asking the guys, 3 or 4 months ago, they would have said that their season is completely done. And that's how MLS works. It's difficult to get 7 wins, let alone in a row, is pretty much unheard of. So in saying that, we've really got to put them under pressure. Otherwise, once they get into a groove there, they're going to start to believe in themselves a lot. And that's the last thing that we want, is to go in there and let them have any sort of belief. So I say we go in and we play exactly how we've been playing, especially away from home, and that's putting teams under pressure. It's a difficult place to play. It's 45,000 loud and strong, but it'll be perfect conditions to leave it all out there for 90 minutes.
Man, you're giving me goosebumps just thinking about this game. I can't wait, and it's still regular season. That's what's going to be so fun about these last 2 months of 2018. So many great matchups, and this is certainly one of them. And like you said, there's something historically for Sporting to play for as well, as if the playoff race wasn't enough. Brad, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. Best of luck in your fantasy draft, and we hope that calf keeps getting better. We're glad that you're back in full training. We hope to see you on the pitch in a Sporting shirt here real soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Brad Evans. What a class act he is, and we'll be back to talk about that conversation just a little bit and wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. We're joined by a very special guest, a good friend from a long time running now, one of the all-time greats in franchise history for the Wizards / Sporting Kansas City. Tony Miola joins us on the phone to talk about the life and legacy of one of the legends for Sporting KC and the Wizards as well. His original head coach with the Wizards, Ron Newman. Hey, Tony, how are you, man?
Hey, guys, how are you? Thanks for having me.
We're doing good, and it's a little bit of sad news here that we're bringing you on for, but I think more than anything to celebrate the life of a guy who has a real legacy here in Kansas City. He was the first ever head coach in MLS history, hired in 1995 to take over the Wiz, and I'm just reading from the Sporting Kansas City news release. It says he brought in legends Preki, Chris Klein, Mo Johnston, Tony Miola, and more to join that team in Kansas City. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts and what you remember about Ron Newman as the head coach here in Kansas City?
Well, yeah, it is a sad day. I was sad yesterday when I heard about it. Of course, he's a guy that brought me to a place, and I'll tell you a story in a second, because the relationship didn't start off great, but I think ended pretty well. But he brought me to Kansas City for all intents and purposes. He was the head coach there and gave me an opportunity and was just full of life every day. The one thing that sticks out to me more than anything, every single morning he walked into Swope Park. And if you guys knew Swope Park back in the day, it wasn't exactly, didn't look exactly then like it looks now. But he would walk in every day and he would say, "Good morning, my lovelies." And he'd walk through straight through the middle of the locker room. And he said, by the time he got to, you know, the entrance where his hallway was for his office, he said, "I'll see you out on the pitch," you know, and he loved being out on the field. He just loved seeing a ball move around, and he loved kind of just seeing people enjoy the game, because that's what he did. He enjoyed the game. And I thought back to it, and, you know, Guy Newman, his son, was also there at the time, and I know they did a lot of things to get up over the years. Can't imagine how special that must have been for both he and Guy, because times in our life where we get to work, you, me, anybody gets to work with their son and something that they love to do so much. So he was a really special guy, he'll be missed. I hope that people, you know, a lot of people won't remember his name probably of this generation, but I hope at minimum they go back and look at some of the accomplishments, because, you know, we don't get to do all the things doing today if it wasn't guys like Ron Newman.
I think that's a great point, Tony, because you look at his career and he came over so early on before Major League Soccer was even around, was in the NASL, was in the indoor game. But that was a different time for soccer in America, wasn't it? And Ron Newman was a big part of it here in Kansas City.
Yeah, it was a different time. Something like this happens, people start seeing all the videos and whoever hasn't seen him. He did some of the wildest things, did it with a smile on his face. There's been circulating on social media a soccer's video and a bunch of great players that he coached. Julius came he was in that video. Brian Quinn, a guy I played on the national team with, and Ron Newman, like, he in there and he does dance and he does all this stuff. And there's the other one where he in Fort Lauderdale, when things were going well, they had different ways of doing it. And they came out in a funeral with a funeral hearse, and in the end, Ron Newman jumps out of a and says, "What did it get?" You know, and I'm just amazing that he got all of this stuff, especially being a foreigner, because in America we were, you know, in a lot of ways we're used to some of the quirkiness that goes on with this stuff. It was just him wanting to see the sport grow, wanting it to see it do well, and wanting to be a part of it, and this sort of joy that he had for the game. I mean, he did so much for the game. He's going to be missed.
So tell us your story, Tony, about how things started versus how they ended.
Yeah, so Alexi and I got traded there on the same day for Mark Chung and Mike Allman. We came from the Metro Stars, and those two guys went the other way. And it wasn't an overly popular trade, I don't think, at the time. And I don't know if it is still this day. But Ron really didn't make the final call, is what I'm understanding. And first thing, Ron picks up the phone, and I talked to Doug Newman, no relation, but Doug was working in the organization. He said, "You know, this is, we're going to fly you here, and this is when you're going to get here." And Ron picked up the phone. He said, "Hey, Tony, happy to have you." He goes, "If it were up to me, I wouldn't have made the trade, but you're on our team now, so let's roll." It was so Ron Newman when you got to. So after the fact, you know, I busted his chops a little bit about, unfortunately, I got hurt that year, so I spent the last couple games on the sideline, and he was released at that point because we didn't really do well. But we joked about it, and then I'd seen him, I'd seen Guy over the years, and we would laugh about it all the time, you know. And he'd say, "Oh, I was wrong about that, you know. I should have gotten that one right." And so it was. We had a really good chuckle about it, really good laugh, and I'll always have good memories of Ron Newman.
Well, Tony, we really appreciate the time. I know you got to run. You're doing your own national radio stuff this week as well. But I just think it's important. You know, look, with what's happened with Sporting over the years and the new stadium and the rebrand and all that, I still think it's important. We never forget the foundation of where this all came from and the role that you guys and people like Ron Newman played in it, because we're not all here having the Sporting Kansas City show right now without those early days and all the great stuff you guys did early on. So thanks a lot for the time and reliving a little bit of Ron Newman with us, and hopefully we can talk to you again real soon, man.
Yeah, and thanks for having people remember him. And I'm sure Ron Newman has all this stuff been going on in the years, had a huge on his face knowing that he was part of it. So thanks for the work you're doing.
All right, you too, Tony. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Take care.
All right, that is Tony Miola. Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this. All right, back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to both Tony Miola and Brad Evans for joining us on the show today, talking with Brad about a myriad of topics and with Tony Miola about the life and legacy of Ron Newman, head coach with the Kansas City Wizards, who passed away earlier this week. A couple of housekeeping things before we move on to previewing this Seattle Sounders matchup a little bit, Carter. A congratulations in order for Seth Sinovic, who was named to the MLS Team of the Week. All of a sudden, some pub coming Seth's way. We had him on the show last week. We talked about him on the pregame show. Sam McDowell wrote a really nice piece about Seth, and maybe people taking notice a little bit, because a very unsung guy finally getting sung a little bit.
Yeah, very good for him. And, you know, if I'm Seth Sinovic, I'm talking about this run in August and how it kind of coincided with myself coming back into the lineup, that's for sure. Shout out to Sam McDowell for riding our coattails yet again, picking up on our ideas.
He will point out that article came out before our pregame show, but I would point out that we were in
radio
the planning
show.
Stages. Yeah, the radio show Tuesday
just
was first.
Just ages before.
Proof is in the pudding, Sam. Yeah. Take that.
Great listener, though. Appreciate it.
We look forward to an article about Brad Evans coming soon. Oh, we kid Sam because he's awesome. He does a great job. And also, you, of course, the voice of Swope Park Rangers. How about a shout-out to Amir Jidic and Eric Dick for earning USL Team of the Week honors as well?
That was a big win for the Rangers, as they're trying to claw their way back into the playoff race. They have a ton of home games coming up. Really back-loaded schedule in terms of the home games. So I think they still have it very much in their grasp to get back in those playoff spots. And like hearing those two Sporting guys getting in the Team of the Week there.
Of course, winning games is all great, and they want to win games there, but Peter has made it very clear that the purpose of that team is to get minutes for players who are coming up through the academy system and bridging that gap from a competition standpoint. Players coming back from injury. We heard Brad Evans talking about getting some minutes with Swope Park Rangers. For players to stay fit who aren't getting the minutes that they need, that's been used for guys like Diego Rubio and Seth Sinovic this year.
With the goalkeepers, it's been especially great. I think that's the prime example there. They've been alternating a lot with Zendejas and Dick.
They're not just sitting around.
Both of them are getting some games and seeing some action. So I think Eric Dick won Save of the Week the previous week, and now he's in the Team of the Week. So, yeah, you see that it's paying dividends.
Well, and guys like Gianluca Busio, who gets to come back in and play some minutes for Sporting KC in this win against Minnesota United this past weekend, he's getting minutes to Swope Park Rangers in between those games. And Juan Cousin and Jalen Lindsay, they're getting those minutes as well. And I'll point it out again, man. We've heard a lot about teams like FC Dallas having these great academy systems, but there is such a jump from the academy to the first team, and we've seen a lot of players really struggle to make that jump, and Sporting Kansas City have something in place that's allowing them to make that jump a lot more fluidly, I would say.
And we saw a couple times now from Minnesota United when they've come into Children's Mercy Park with a bunch of injuries, and they just don't have the same setup where they could send guys out to get playing time. So I think definitely Sporting has benefited this year in having guys that have played with the Rangers, and they're a little more fresh. And so I think for Minnesota United, that's a prime example of why you do want a USL team and the ability to do that.
Yeah, so congratulations to Amir Jidic and Eric Dick. USL Team of the Week honors for Swope Park Rangers as well. All right, let's take a look ahead for Sporting Kansas City. And before we even look at Saturday's game, more midweek action in MLS. And I'm loving it. We've been getting a lot of midweek games. And I love it when it's not Sporting that's playing in them, because we can just sit back and watch these results and how they affect Sporting. Well, New York Red Bulls, that's a team. I put them in the conversation for team Sporting Kansas City you're trying to catch for points, because who knows? That could be your MLS Cup final, and that could determine who gets the home game. So they are at home against a reeling Houston Dynamo team right now. You have to fancy the Red Bulls in that one, but it's MLS, so we'll watch on Wednesday night, tomorrow night. Also, an upcoming opponent of Sporting Kansas City's, the Philadelphia Union, will be at DC United tomorrow night. That's a Union team that's in good form. They've won four of their last five, trying to push their way back into the playoff conversation. Sporting's going to play them right before they play in the U.S. Open Cup final. It's a tough road game, but those circumstances could make things a little bit better for Sporting Kansas City in that regard. So we'll watch that one. And then another one to keep an eye on, San Jose Earthquakes, 9:30 tomorrow night, hosting FC Dallas. Earthquakes are having a terrible season. FC Dallas are 1 point ahead of Sporting Kansas City right now. They're looking for revenge because they got beat at home by San Jose not that long ago.
That's the MLS you were just talking about.
Yep, that's the most MLS of all MLS results so far this season. Mm-hmm. But that one's in San Jose, so that's going to be an interesting one for us to watch as well on Wednesday night. And then the Portland Timbers at home against Toronto FC, who are trying to push their way back into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. And all of a sudden, Portland went from 17 unbeaten to 4 losses in a row, which, by the way, is something to keep an eye on when it comes to, say, the hot run of Seattle. Sometimes those big, long, successful streaks can end in a thud. Portland's trying to turn it back around. They're below the playoff line all of a sudden.
Yep.
And Toronto FC, they're outside of the playoff line as well, in 9th place right now in the East. So that's going to be an interesting one. Yeah. Two desperate teams, I think.
Both with the games in hand, which is why they're playing here in midweek. And so, yeah, they'll be desperate for points. And curious to see if Toronto can make that late season push like Seattle is making. I would have just written their name down in pen at the beginning of the year being in the playoffs, but it's been a rough year for TFC. But obviously Sporting fans will be hoping they've got a little bit up their alley in Portland here this weekend, or tomorrow, sorry.
And this is why we talk all the time about how points in hand aren't as good as they seem when you have them, because there's another shoe that comes to drop. So those two teams are playing at 9:30 on the Pacific Coast. It'll be 7:30 their time and 9:30 our time. And then Portland has to turn around and go to New England just, 3 days later and play a Saturday game there. And meanwhile, Toronto FC, they go back to the East Coast to play at home against LAFC. And I think we'll all be rooting for the Toronto FC boys in that one.
I think that's a couple games back-to-back here.
Yeah.
We'll be rooting for the Canadians.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's tough. All of a sudden you got to play a massive game in Portland in a tough environment on a Wednesday and turn around and play an equally massive game for both teams traveling from West Coast all the way to the East Coast in a short period of time. We've been through it. We've seen how difficult that is. Squad rotation comes into play. That's going to be a tough situation for both of those teams.
It really is. It really is. And so I think Sporting definitely has benefited from not having to play in these midweek situations late on in the season where games are kind of piling up for some teams.
They do have one midweek game left this season, Sporting Kansas City, but we'll tackle that one when we come to it. Now let's talk about Sporting Kansas City and Seattle Sounders FC. Kickoff at 3 o'clock on Saturday. You can hear it on our sister station, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. You can watch it on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus and the Fox Sports Go app. And this is a big one, man. How surprised are you that this Seattle team, without Jordan Morris, are as hot as they are right now, winners of 7 straight, particularly the way that they started the season, 4-9-5 to start the year?
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised just that, 7 in a row is incredible. Like Brad Evans was just saying, even to just get 7 wins, you're feeling pretty good about yourself sometimes. And so I'm surprised. They're aging, but On the other hand, you always knew that they're going to go out and make a move. They always seem to do that towards the middle of the season, and they get in Rui Diaz, and he does seem like a pretty decent player for them. So I'm surprised, but those old guys are playing well as well. I mean, Ozzie Alonso's back into form, and Chad Marshall just, you know, maybe one of the most underrated players in league history, which is tough to say considering how many Defender of the Years he's won, but it always seems he always just kind of is just there. And again, he's having a fantastic year. So, I'm surprised. Yeah, I am surprised that this team has rattled off seven straight.
Raul Rui Diaz, you mentioned, Peruvian designated player, has come in. He's played in seven games. He's only scored two goals, and I say only, but you know, we talk about, you know, he hasn't been like the Nico Ladero guy that just came in and completely turned everything around for Seattle when they went on that run to MLS Cup a couple of years ago. He has been a good addition, don't get me wrong, but this Seattle team's doing it with defense.
Yep.
They're doing it with defense, and then they're just finding a way to nick a goal. It's kind of the old-fashioned way, really, for them this year. I will be honest, I'm a little skeptical as to how long that can hold up. Can they continue to win games down the stretch playing that way on a week-in, week-out basis? Look, we've seen teams do that. I mean, we see Colorado do it a couple years ago, and maybe for one season you can hold on to that. But, man, you look at them right now, and their goal scoring numbers, they've scored 32 goals all season long. That's fewer than every team in the Western Conference with the exception of the Colorado Rapids.
And that's considering they just scored five against the Galaxy. I mean, they were just dreadful at the beginning of the year.
Right. And they've only conceded, though, 26 on the year. They have the best defensive record in the West. I mean, I think you're looking at the two best defenses in the West right now in Sporting KC and Seattle on Saturday.
And two defenses in red-hot form. They're coming off back-to-back clean sheets. They've in those seven wins, I think they have four clean sheets, and the other three games they allowed one goal. And then Sporting has the four clean sheets in a row as well. So it could be a really cagey affair up there in Seattle. And interesting to hear from Brad Evans that they didn't, you know, in Seattle especially, they didn't like it when teams came and took it to them. And I think Sporting has done that a few times up there. We just haven't had some luck over the years.
I think that's the way we're going to see it on Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. All right, Carter, it's been fun. We will be talking to you from the sidelines in Seattle on Saturday afternoon.
That's right.
All right, that's going to do it for us on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. We will see you next week.